This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Noelle Lim. Joining me today is Fleur Pellerin, former French Minister for SMEs, Innovation and Digital Economy, to discuss why France has one of the most dynamic digital startup ecosystems in the world outside Silicon Valley. Ms. Pellerin is also managing partner and co-founder of Corellia Capital, a fund invested in technology startups with ambitions to grow across Europe and to expand in Asia. Thank you for speaking with us. What has contributed significantly to the growth of startups in France?
I think there was in France for the past 10 to 15 years quite a lot of very good tech entrepreneurs who had engineering backgrounds and who had very good ideas and who were nice entrepreneurs. But the problem is that they were not really in an ecosystem, meaning they did not really have relationship with each other. There was not really a sort of permanent exchange between the investors and the startups and with the state and with the universities. And so I think that what created the nice environment that we have today is that all these people, you know, who contribute to create a tech ecosystem, they started to work together, to collaborate, to mentor each other, to invest in each other, the Silicon Valley, basically. And it started to create this ecosystem that we now have in France and that is really, really vibrant.
And is this really due to your education system? Just looking at the statistics, right? France has one of the most Nobel Prize winners, for example, and has the second highest number of Fields medalists for mathematics. And according to a recent Pew research, 4 in 10 in France actually view the country's technology achievements as one of the best in the world. Obviously, there's some pride here. All countries do invest substantially in education, but what is it in your system that has created this fertile environment for engineering, science and technology to take root?
I think it's really a legacy because we have a very old education system that has proven very efficient, I think, over time. And I think it's the sort of legacy of history in this what we call STEM, education field, mathematics, physics, etc. We have very old schools that have been created like in the 19th, sometimes 18th century. So they are very old schools with long traditions of excellency in the engineering area. And probably it's this tradition that kept very, very good over time, and with probably some effort put on research and fundamental research. So it is true that we have a very good education in France in mathematics, in algorithmics, in computer science. But I would say that this is not necessarily enough to create a good ecosystem because you also need people who will have the right mindset to take risks, to create businesses, to have an entrepreneurial mindset. And sometimes if you're good at research, it's not the same skills that you have that will make you a good entrepreneur. So what I would say is that it's true that we have a very good training in hard sciences, in mathematics. And that's the reason why when you go to Silicon Valley, for example, you will find a lot of French engineers who are CTOs or who are working in the biggest tech companies in the Valley. But then probably we lack a bit of marketing skills, of other soft skills that are probably better developed in other areas of the globe. So I think we have a mixture between an excellent training system, but maybe some blanks or voids that we need to fill in terms of creativity, marketing creativity, product management, these kind of things.
How do you cultivate that risk-taking culture?
Oh, that's the most difficult thing on earth, I would say. So when I was minister in charge of digital, I was also in charge of small businesses. So I consider that I was in charge of entrepreneurship. And I realized that in France, there's this very strong aversion to risk. We, as a society, as a culture, we don't like risk and we don't like failure. So, for example, if you're a failed entrepreneur, it would be very difficult for you to raise money. Whereas in the Valley, if you go to see a very famous venture capitalist and you're an entrepreneur, he will probably ask you how many times did you fail before. And if you say zero, he will not trust you to be a good entrepreneur. So in France, we have this cultural problem where failure is really a social disgrace and you don't want to admit that you've failed before. And so I try to change that. But as a minister, it's not easy just to write a decree or a law and to say that the mindset will change. So I started with small initiatives, like, for example, importing these failure conferences, fail cons, as we call them in the US. So showcasing stories and lives of people who are now very famous and very successful, but who come and who explain to the younger generation how they started by failing. Like they were not good at school, or they started a business and they failed, or they're now a sports champion, but it took them a very long time. And they explain how they made it to the top, but by failing first, in order to put the people more at ease with the notion of failing before succeeding. So that was one idea, but of course it's not something that will change overnight, and it's not something that you can work on with just one measure or one reform or one idea. So it's an overall I think culture. And what has changed a lot over the past, I would say, 5 to 10 years in France, is that we have more role models. So I think role models are very important, because they are inspirational persons, figures. And when you have, for example, a very successful entrepreneur whom everybody admires, then probably it helps other people, maybe younger people, to take risk and try to achieve things as good as well as this kind of people. So I think role models are very important to inspire younger generation and to help them take risk. But it's a very long process.
In France, they've provided financing support through BPI France, a public investment bank. I think it can be helpful yet unhelpful, as you might end up creating artificial conditions for success or maybe even respond too slowly to the needs of startups. So I'm really curious, how do you strike that right balance of encouraging risk taking while not over babysitting startups?
It's very difficult. You're right. You're absolutely right. So when we designed this BPI, this public bank for investment, was created under the previous government. And when we created that bank, it was really to deal with a market failure, because we have that approach that the reason why BPI should invest is that no other private investor would invest or would support this or that sector or this or that company. And so we also took the inspiration a bit from, what happened in Israel, where the public sector was very efficient at attracting foreign capital, and especially American capital. It was 30 to 40 years ago, but at that time, there was a public bank that injected some money into the ecosystem in matching funds. So saying, if I put one US dollar and a foreign investor put one US dollar, then it's good for the ecosystem, because it will attract this public money will have a strong leverage on attracting foreign money. So they did something that was very efficient to finance the ecosystem. And so did we in France. But it's true that at some point, this public intervention must be removed. So when the private financing market is working properly, there should be no need anymore for public intervention. But we're not there yet. So I think BPI has done an amazing job in helping the fund ecosystem, so the financing ecosystem to grow, because probably 10 years ago in France, the VC environment was a bit less mature than it is today. And by investing in funds, the BPI really helped structuring this fund environment. So through its fund of funds activity, BPI really helped the VC ecosystem, the VC fund ecosystem in France, to get more mature and to raise bigger funds and to be able to support the growth of startups. So that was very beneficial. And by directly investing also in startups, when sometimes funds were not sufficient in France, the amount of money available for financing startups was not available, then it also helped good businesses to attract financing, where maybe, if BPI had not been there, they would not have found any investor. So I think they really did, they really succeeded in their mission, BPI France. And it's a source of inspiration for other countries. But of course, at some point, we expect that BPI will be less and less present in fundraising rounds. And that will mean that the French VC ecosystem or the European VC ecosystem is mature enough to deal to succeed without this public bank.
Do you see that it's important for, say, an agency like BPI France or any other entity to support the startup of certain areas where it requires a lot of capital investment and maybe the private sector is not ready to take that kind of risks? Or do you feel that the government shouldn't intervene at all?
That's a very difficult question, because I think that the public sector is not always or not systematically the best positioned economic player to pick the sectors that are promising sectors and that will be, you know, successful sectors. I think it's very difficult for the state or for the government to make such bets. However, you see in some countries, for example, I just came back from South Korea. In South Korea, for example, the government, the present government, has made a very strong bet on hydrogen. So that's a sectorial or an industrial bet. And the government has committed to invest, I think, 22 or 25 billion US dollar over the next 5 years, I think. So it's a huge commitment and it's a huge bet. So some countries think that, you know, it's the responsibility of the government to drain investment and to direct investment to sectors where the long-term profitability could, you know, prevent some private actors to want to invest because the perspectives of return are too long, are too far away. So I think in some cases it can be, and it's economic theory, it can be perfectly justified for the state to intervene when the private sector, because of long return horizons, because of long profitability horizon, or because of no profitability horizon sometimes, then the government indeed can intervene and can invest. And for example, when you think of all the infrastructure, the telecom infrastructure, the fiber optic, for example, the deployment of a high-speed broadband in remote areas, for example, there's no real business model. So in that case, of course, the state is justified to intervene. And it could be the same in some biotechs, some blockchain, I see a lot of areas today where I'm sure there will be amazing developments in the future, but maybe the business models are not there yet. And so if France still wants to promote and support and root for small startups who want to deploy ideas, products in these sectors, maybe it could be a very good thing for the state to intervene. But honestly, it's very difficult for me to answer that question, because there is no, you know, universal example that it works or that it doesn't work. So it's really every time a very strong bet on the future.
On The Grill this morning, we're speaking with Fleur Pellerin, former French Minister for SMEs, Innovation and Digital Economy. We'll discuss how Europe could become a technology powerhouse and what investments interest her fund.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Welcome back. Fleur Pellerin, former French Minister for SMEs, Innovation and Digital Economy, joins us today. You launched the French Tech Initiative. What's the thinking behind this label?
I was very upset because anytime I travelled abroad, everybody was talking about French luxury, lifestyle, food, wine, but never a French, you know, the technology scene. And I thought that, you know, it was a pity because there were a lot of very good entrepreneurs, and I thought it was really bad that no one knew about the vividness and the dynamic of the French tech ecosystem. So we decided, I decided to create this brand name, so this branding, and we made a lot of communication around these French entrepreneurs that we started to call French Tech. I took a large delegation to the CES in Las Vegas, and then we did a lot of events together. And then the press and the media started reporting about, you know, what was going on the tech scene in France and the French Tech, etc. And it started to become a name just to, you know, to speak about this French new generation of French entrepreneurs. And I think it was a bit of communication, but it was also to create a community mindset. And it did really work, and there was a proudness to be part of French Tech. And then, of course, we worked, I mean, when I was minister, I also worked on the tax environment, the incentives to invest, etc. So there were other many other things than just this pure communication aspect.
Like you mentioned, the Silicon Valley overshadows Europe, and now China is rising really quickly. I know you mentioned about marketing and creativity, but from where I sit, I feel that the French invented creativity. So what must Europe do to become a tech powerhouse?
Europe as a whole, it's a region that is very integrated from a regulatory point of view, also from an economic point of view, but still we have different cultures, we have different languages. So what we really need, I think, is to have the potential to grow a company. I don't know, a German company or an Italian company could have the potential to become really a very big regional champion. But it's difficult before, it's not the same market. So it's not like you're in Texas and then you need to grow your business in, I don't know, Nebraska. If you're in France and you want to grow your business in Germany or in Italy, it's really as the same as growing your business in the States. It's the same, almost the same cultural difference and the same efforts and the same transaction costs. So it's much more difficult to address the European market as a whole, because there's no such thing as a European market as a whole. So scaling our businesses is really key for the European tech industry. Finding corporations that can consolidate, so through acquisition or through mergers, accelerate the growth of economic actors in Europe is something also that is needed. And you will find these kind of movements much more in the US than in Europe, because there are more players in the US who have very deep pockets and who can put a lot of money on the table to make a big acquisition or finance a big merger. So consolidation, scaling, and you know, I think for the rest, all the ingredients are present. I mean, Europe is such an amazing region with a lot of opportunities. And, you know, we're talking about France, but we saw recently unicorns born in Romania or in Lithuania or in Estonia, small countries, but who are very creative as well. So there's a lot of, there's a big talent pool, a huge talent pool. And the chance that we have is probably valuations are still lower than in the US. So for investors, it's a good opportunities of return to invest in good companies at lower valuation and make a higher return. So I think right now, even, you know, after this crisis or in the midst of this COVID crisis, there is still a very big opportunity to catch in Europe.
So through your venture capital outfit, Corellia Capital, what interests you most?
What I want to, the value that I want to give to entrepreneurs is really to help them develop their business in Asia for the moment. And so for an entrepreneur, being in the mindset to develop his business in Asia is not really an early stage matter. It's something that comes later when the business is growing, when you're close to profitability, and when you start, you know, thinking about scaling your business and getting global. So it's more late stage thing. And that's really what Corellia Capital is very good at, you know, opening doors, creating business opportunities, finding investors in Asia for European entrepreneurs. But now in the second phase of our business, I'm raising a second fund right now that will be bigger than the first one, which was 200 million euro. So we're targeting this times 300 to 400 million euro. And this time I want to start to invest in Asia and to do the same for Asian businesses who want to develop their business in Europe and maybe later in Africa, because we have strong ties with Africa. So I want to start to, you know, to build the bridge from the other side to Europe to really, you know, create these synergies I was mentioning also earlier, and to help Asian players become stronger thanks to business opportunities in Europe. So that's really what I want to do. And in the midterm, we want to be very balanced and to invest our funds half in Asia, half in Europe.
What areas of technology interest you?
So we're very agnostic. So we decided, and it's not very popular in France to have vertical, you know, specialized funds. So there are not so many specialized funds in France. And we've decided to be agnostic in terms of technology. So something that we would not do because the investment cycles are longer is biotechnology, because, you know, developing a molecule, it takes much more time than a traditional business. There must be a digital aspect, so we would not invest in jeans or, you know, jewelry if there's not a digital dimension to the business. things. So we've invested in mobility startups, in blockchain startups, in AI, very broad portfolio.
Speaking about big tech, and I think you were one of early advocate for regulating technology giants. So because they present a challenge to governments, right? Because they are monopolies, they have billions of users on their networks, they exercise a lot of influence. So what is your view about regulating big tech companies now?
I think it's very necessary. So I think it's from a technical point of view, it's not very easy. But then when you look at politically, the way it has evolved over the past years, the problems in terms of privacy, the problems in terms of intervening in elections. Maybe 5 years ago or 10 years ago, when you said something like that, you appeared as somebody who was opposing technology and progress and against the internet, etc. But I think now everybody realizes the danger. There's a need to separate some of the activities. But I don't know what government will have the strength and the courage to deal with it, because we can see that these players are so powerful today. They have so much money. They can lobby so much that it's very difficult to address this issue. So I think there should be a coalition of governments, imposing this regulation to the companies on their territories.
On a personal note, when you were only about 6 months old, you were left in the streets in South Korea where you were born, and a French couple adopted and raised you. Have you ever attempted to trace your biological parents?
No, never, actually. I know that some people, there were a lot of adopted children in the 70s coming from Korea, all over Europe and also in the States at the time. And I know that some people need to find their biological parents to have some closure or something. I never felt that, because I always felt totally, a whole person with my parents, with my non-biological parents, who are my parents anyway. And I didn't feel like I missed something to be myself, really. So I understand people who need this, but I never felt the need myself to look back.
Thank you for speaking with us. That was Fleur Pellerin, former French Minister for SMEs, Innovation and Digital Economy. She is scheduled to speak at the eNation Symposium, organised by MAGIC from 20th to 23rd October. I'm Noelle Lim on BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.